Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Mardell. And now we return to Black Bartlemy's Treasure by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 11. Adam Penfeather, his narrative. Mine is a strange, wild story, Martin, but needs must I tell it, and in few words as may be. 15 years agone, or thereabouts, I became one of that league known as the Brotherhood of the Coast, and swore comradeship with one Nicholas Frant, a Kent man even as I. Now, though I was full young and a cautious man, yet having a natural hatred of Spaniards and their ways, I wrought right well against them, and was mighty diligent in many desperate affrays against their ships and along the coast. 'Twas I and my good comrade, Nick Frant, with 16 lusty lads, took sea in an open pinnace and captured the great treasure galleon Dolores del Principe off Cartagena. And what with all this, Martin, and my being blessed with some education and the gift of adding two and two together, I got me rapid advancement in the Brotherhood until, well, shipmate, I that am poor and solitary was once rich and with nigh 1,000 bully fellows at command. And then it was that I fell in with that arch devil, that master rogue whose deeds had long been a terror throughout the main, a fellow more bloody than any Spaniard, more treacherous than any Portugal, and more cruel than any Indian, Inca, Mosquito, Maya, or Aztec. And this man an Englishman, and one of birth and breeding, who hid his identity under the name of Bartlemy. I met him first in Tortuga, where we of the Brotherhood lay, 6 stout ships and nigh 400 men, convened for an expedition against Santa Catalina, and this for 2 reasons. First, because 'twas a notable rich city, and second, to rescue certain of the Brotherhood that lay there waiting to be burnt at the next auto de fe. Well, Martin, 'tis upon a certain evening that this Bartlemy comes aboard my ship, and with him his mate, by name Tressidy. And never was greater difference than 'twixt these two, Tressidy being a great wild fellow with a steel hook in place of his left hand, do you see, and Bartlemy, a slender, dainty-seeming, fiendly, smiling gentleman, very nice as to speech and deportment, and clad in the latest mode, from curling periwig to jeweled shoe-buckles. "Captain Penfeather," says he, "your most dutiful humble, let me but perish, here is cursed reek-a-tar," with which, Martin, he claps a jeweled pomander to the delicate nose of him. "You've heard of me, I think, Captain," says he, "and of my ship, yonder, the Lady's Delight." I told him I had, Martin, bluntly and to the point, whereat he laughs and bows and forthwith proffers to aid us against Santa Catalina, the which I refuse forthwith. But my council of captains, seeing his ship was larger than any we possessed, and exceeding well armed and manned, overruled me, and the end of it was we sailed, 6 ships of the Brotherhood and this accursed pirate. Well, Martin, Santa Catalina fell, according to my plans, and the governor and the council agreeing to pay ransom, I drew off my companies and camped outside the walls of the town till they should collect the money. Now the women of this place were exceeding comely, Martin, in especial the governor's lady. And upon the second night was sudden outcry and uproar within the city, whereupon I marched into the place forthwith and found this cursed Bartlemy and his rogues, grown impatient, were at their devil's work. Hastening to the governor's house, I found it gutted, and him dragged from his bed and with the life gashed out of him. I, Martin, torn body and throat, do you see, as by the fangs of some great beast. That was the first time I saw what a steel hook may do. As for this poor gentleman's lady, she was gone. Hereupon we of the Brotherhood fell upon these pirate rogues and fought them by light of the blazing houses, for they had fired the city. And I, thus espying the devil, Bartlemy, met him point to point. He was very full of rapier tricks, but so was I, Martin. Also I was younger, and winged him sore, and had surely ended him, but the trusty and divers others got him away. And what with the dark night and the woods that lie shorewards, he, together with some few of his crew, got them back aboard his ship, the Lady's Delight, and so away. But 12 of his rogues we took, beyond divers we slew in fight, and those 12 I saw hang that same hour. A week later we sailed for Tortuga, with no less than 91,000 pieces of 8 for our labor. But I and those with me never had the spending of a single piece, Martin, for we ran into a storm, such as I never saw the like of even in those seas. Well, we ran afore it for 3 days in its fury, nothing abating all this time. I never quit the deck, but I had been wounded, and on the third night, being fevered and outworn, turned in below. I was awakened by Nick Frant roaring in my ear, for the tempest was very loud and fierce. "Adam," cried he, "we're lost, every soul and the good money. We struck a reef, Adam. 'Tis the end. Oh, the good money." Hereupon I climb above deck, the vessel on her beam ends, and in desperate plight, and not to be seen I the dark save the white spume as the seas broke over us. Nonetheless, I set the crew to cutting away her mast and heaving the ordnance overboard to lighten her thereby. But while this was doing, comes a great wave roaring out of the dark and dashing aboard us, whirled me up and away. And I, borne aloft on that mighty hissing sea, strove no more, doubting not my course was run. So blinded, choking, I was borne aloft, and then, Martin, found myself adrift in water, calm as any mill pond, a small lagoon, and spying through the dark a grove of palmetto trees, presently managed to climb ashore, more dead than alive, and lying there, I prayed, a thing I had not done for many a year. As the dawn came, I saw the great wave had hurled me over the barrier reef into this small lagoon, and beyond the reef lay all that remained of my good ship. I was yet viewing this dolorous sight, and much cast down for the loss of my companions, in especial my sworn friend Nicholas Frant, when I heard a sound behind me, and turning about, espied a woman. And in this woman's face, fair though it was, I read horror and sadness beyond tears. And yet I knew her, for the same had been wife to the murdered governor of Santa Catalina. "Go back," says she in Spanish, pointing to the surf that thundered beyond the reef. "Go back. Here is the devil. The sea hath more mercy. Go back while she may." And now she checked all at once, and falls a-shivering. For a voice reached us, a man's voice, a-singing, fair to hear. And the song he sang was this: "Hey, cheerily, oh, and cheerily, oh, and cheerily come sing, oh, while at the main yard to and fro." And knowing this voice to my cost, I looked around for some weapon, since I had none and was all but naked, and whipping up a jagged and serviceable stone, stood awaiting him with this in my fist. And down the beach he comes, jocund and debonair in his finery, albeit something pale by reason of excess and my rapier work. "And now I come to look at you, Martin, he was just such another as you, as to face and feature, though lacking your beef and bone. Now he, beholding me where I stood, flourishes off his belaced hat, and making me a bow, comes on smiling. 'Ah,' says he gaily, "'Tis Captain Penfeather of the Brotherhood a-colloguing with my latest wife. Is she not a pearl, a dainty woman-wear, Captain, a sweet and luscious piece, a passionate proud beauty worth the taming, eh, Captain?' "'And she is tamed, see you. "'To your dainty knees, wench, down. "'Now, though he smiled yet and spake her gentle, "'she, bowing proud head, sank to her knees, "'crouching on the ground before him, "'while he looked down on her the devil in his eyes, "'and his jeweled fingers toying with a dagger in his girdle. "'A strange dagger with a hilt wrought very artificially "'and the shape of a naked woman.' "'How?' says I, leaning across the table. "'A woman, Penfeather. "'Aye, shipmate, so. "'I stood mighty alert, my eyes on this dagger, "'being minded to whip it into his rogue's heart "'as chance might offer. "'I wonder,' says he to this poor lady, "'I wonder how long I shall keep thee, Madonna. "'A week? "'A month? "'A year?' "'Venus knoweth, for you amuse me, sweet. "'Rise, rise, dear my lady, my Dolores of joy, "'rise and aid me with thy counsel, "'for here hath this misfortunate, clumsy captain fool "'blundered into our amorous paradise, "'this tender Cyprian isle sacred to our passion, "'yet here he is profaning our joys "'with his base material presence.' How then shall we rid ourselves of this offense? The knife? This lover of men of mine? The bullet? Yet 'tis a poor, small, naked rogue, and in 2 days cometh my lady's delight, and Tressidy with his hook. See, my Dolores, for 2 days he shall be our slave, and thereafter, for thy joy, shall show thee how to die, my sweet, torn twixt pimento trees, or Tressidy's hook, thou shalt choose the manner of it. And now unveil, unveil, my goddess of the isle, so shall... Martin! My stone took him neath the ear, and as he swayed, reeling to the blow, lithe and swift as any panther, this tortured woman sprang, and I saw the flash of steel ere it was buried in his breast. Even then he didn't fall, but staggering to a pimento tree, leans him there and falls a-laughing, a strange, high-pitched, gasping laugh. And as he laughed thus, I saw the silver haft of the dagger that was the woman leap and quiver in his breast. Then laughing yet, he, never heeding me, plucked and leveled sudden pistol. And when the smoke cleared, the brave Spanish lady lay dead upon the sands. "'A noble piece, Captain,' says he, gasping for breath. And then to her, "'Art gone, my goddess. I follow thee.' And now he sinks to his knees and begins to crawl where she lay, but getting no further than her feet by reason of his faintness, he clasps her feet and kisses them, and laying his head upon them, closes his eyes. Penfeather, he groans, my treasure hidden. Dagger. Then I came very hastily and raised his head, for I had oft heard talk of this treasure. And in that moment he died. So I left them lying, and coming to the seaboard, sat there a great while, watching the break of the seas on what was left of the wreck, yet seeing it not. I sat there till noon, Martin, until, driven by thirst and hunger and heat of sun, I set off to seek their habitation, for by their looks I judged them well fed and housed. But, and here was the marvel, Martin, seek how I might, I found no sign of any hut or shelter, save that afforded by nature as caves and trees, and was forced to satisfy my cravings with such fruits as flourished in profusion, for this island, Martin, is a very earthly paradise. That night, the moon being high and bright, I came to that stretch of silver sand beside the lagoon, where they lay together rigid and pale. And though I had no other tool but his dagger, and a piece of driftwood, made shift to bury them neath the great pimento tree that stood beside the rock, and both in the same grave. Which done, I betook me to a dry cave hard by, a notable fall of water that plungeth into a lake, and there passed the night. Next day, having explored the island very thoroughly, and dined as best I might on shellfish that do abound, I sat me down where I might behold the sea, and fell to viewing of this silver-hilted dagger. The witch was shaped like to a woman, says I. Aye, Martin, and now, bethinking me of Bartlemy's dying words, anent the same dagger, and of the tales I had heard full oft along the main, regarding this same Bartlemy and his hidden treasure, I fell to handling this dagger, turning and twisting it this way and that, and suddenly, shipmate, I felt the head turn upon the shoulders, twixt the clasping hands, turn and turn until it came away and showed a cavity, and in this cavity a roll of parchment, and that parchment none other than this map with a cryptogram, the which I could make naught of. Now, as I sat thus, studying this meaningless jumble of words, I of a sudden espied a man below me on the reef, a wild, storm-tossed figure, his scanty clothing all shreds and tatters, and as he went seeking of shellfish that were plenteous enough, I knew him for my sworn comrade Nick Frant. And then, Martin, I did strange thing, for blood brothers though we were, I made haste, and all of a tremble, to slip back this map into its hiding place. Which done, I arose, hailing my comrade, and went to meet him joyously enough. And no two men in the world more rejoiced than we, as we clasped hands and embraced each other as only comrades may. It seemed the huge sea that had caught me had caught him likewise, and hurled him sore bruised some mile to the south of the reef. So now I told him of the deaths of Bartlemy and the poor lady. Yet, Martin, and this was strange, I spoke nothing of the knife or treasure. I told him of the expectation I had of the pirate's ship return. And yet I never once spake of the map and chart. And methinks the secret cast a shadow betwixt us, that grew ever deeper, for as the days passed and no sail appeared, there came a strangeness, an unlove betwixt us that grew until one day we fell to open quarrel, disputation, and deadly strife, and the matter no more than a dead man's shirt and that ragged that had come ashore, and we, being in rags and the sun scorching, each claimed the shirt, and from words came blows. He had his seaman's knife, and I, Bartlemy's accursed dagger, and so we fought, after the manner of the buccaneers, his leg bound fast to mine. And Martin, though he was a great fellow and strong, and wounded me sore, in the end I got a thrust under the armpit, and he fell a-dying, and I with him. Then I, seeing death in his eyes, Martin clasped him in my arms, and kissed him and besought him not to die. Whereat he smiled. Adam, says he. Why, Adam, lad. And so died. Then I took the accursed dagger, wet with my comrade's life-blood, and hurled it from me. And so, with many tears and lamentations, I presently buried poor Nick Frant in the sands, and lay there face down upon his grave, wetting it with my tears, and groaning there till nightfall. But all next day, Martin, though my heart yearned to my slain friend, all next day I spent seeking and searching for the dagger had killed him. And as the sun set, I found it. Thereafter I passed my days, since the pirate ship came not, doubtless owing to the late tempest, studying the writing on the chart here, yet came no nearer a solution, though my imagination was inflamed by mention of diamonds, rubies, and pearls, as ye may see written here for yourself. So the time passed till one day at dawn I beheld a great ship, her mizzen and foretopmast gone, standing in for my island, and as she drew nearer, I knew her at last for that accursed pirate ship called Lady's Delight. Being come to anchor within some half mile or so, I saw a boat put off for the reef, and lying well hid, I watched this boat, steered by a knowing hand, pass through the reef by a narrow channel, and so enter the lagoon. Now in this boat were six men, and at the rudder sat Tressidy, and I saw his hook flash in the sun as he sprang ashore. Having beached their boat, they fell to letting off their calivers and pistols and hallooing. "Oh, Captain," they roared, "Bartlemy, ahoy!" And this outcry maintained they for some while. But none appearing to answer, they seemed to take counsel together, and thereafter set off three and three, shouting as they went. And now it seemed they knew no more of Bartlemy's hiding place than I, whereat I rejoiced greatly. So I lay all that forenoon, watching their motions and hearing their outcries, now here, now there, until, marveling at the absence of Bartlemy, they sat down all six upon the spit of sand where I lay hid, and fell to eating and drinking, talking the while, though too low for me to hear what passed. But all at once they seemed to fall to disputation, Tressidy and a small dark fellow against the four, and thereafter to brawl and fight. Though this was more butchery than fight, Martin, for Tressidy shoots down too, ere they can rise, and leaping up falls on the other two with his hook. So with aid from the small dark fellow, they soon have made an end of their four companions, and leaving them lying, come up the beach, and sitting below the ledge of rock whereon I lay, snug hidden, fell to talk. "So, Ben, camarado mio, we be committed to it now, since these four be dead and all men well loved by Bartlemy. Needs must Bartlemy follow 'em." "Aye," says the man Ben, "when we've found him, though Bartlemy's a fighting man. And being man can die, Ben, and once dead, we stand his heirs. You and I, Ben, I and you." "Well and good," says Ben, "but for this treasure, where lieth it? And for that matter, Roger, where is Bartlemy?" "Both to find, Ben, so let us set about it forthwith." The which they did, Martin, for 3 days they sought the island over, and I watching them. On the third day, as they are sitting neath the great pimento tree I have mentioned, and I watching close by, Tressidy sits up all at once. "Ben," says he, "what be yon?" And he pointed to a mound of sand hard by. "Lord knoweth," says Ben. "Yon's been digging," says Tressidy, "and none so long since." "Aye," said Ben, "and now what?" "Now," says Tressidy, "let us dig likewise." "Aye, but what with?" says Ben. "Our fingers," says Tressidy. So there and then they fell to digging, casting up the loose sand with their two hands dog fashion, and I watching turned my head that I might not see. "Ha," says Tressidy in a while, "here's foul reek, Ben, foul reek." "Right cursed," says Ben, and then uttered a great hoarse cry, and I, knowing what they had come upon, kept my face turned away. "'Tis she," says Ben in a whisper. "I and him," says Tressidy. "The man is ill thing, but needs must. His dagger, Ben, his dagger." "Here's no dagger," says Ben. "Here's empty sheath, but no stealing." "'Tis fallen out," says Tressidy in a strangled voice. "Seek, Ben, seek." So despite the horror of the thing, they sought Martin, violating death, and careless of corruption they sought. And all the time the thing they sought was quivering in this right hand. "Ben," says Tressidy when they were done, "Ben, how came he did? How?" "Who shall say, Roger? Mayhap they did each other's business." "Why, then, where's the dagger of the woman? The silver goddess, where? And how came they buried?" "Why, there's the rub, Roger. Why, says Tressidy, looky, Ben, 'tis in my mind. We're not alone on this island. And who should be here, Roger? The man that slew our captain. Here, then, was silence for a while. Then the man Ben arose and spat. Bah, says he. Come away, Roger, ere I stifle. Come, I the devil's name. So they went, and I, lying hid secure, watched them out of sight. Now, when they were gone, I took counsel with myself, for here were two desperate bloody rogues, very well armed, and here was I, a solitary man with naught to my defense save for Nick's knife and the silver-hilted dagger, which was heavy odds, Martin, as you'll agree. Now I have ever accounted myself a something timid man, wherefore in cases of desperate need and danger I've been wont to rely on my wit rather than weapons, on head rather than hands. So now, as I looked upon this cursed dagger, wherewith I had slain my poor friend, beholding this evil silver woman whose smile seemed verily to allure men to strife and bloodshed, the end of it was I stole from my lurking place and set the dagger amid the gnarled roots of the great pimento tree, where it might have slipped from dying fingers, and so got me back into hiding. And sure enough, in a while, comes the big man Tressidy a-stealing, furtive fashion, and falls to hunting, both in the open grave and round about it, but finding nothing, steals him off again. Scarce was he out of eyeshot, Martin, than cometh the little dark fellow Ben, who likewise fell to stealthy search, grubbing here and there on hands and knees, yet with none better fortune than his comrade. But of a sudden he gives a spring, and stooping, stands erect with Bartlemy's dagger in his hand. Now scarce had he found it, then comes Tressidy, creeping from where he had lain watching. Ah, Ben, says he jovially, how then, lad, how then, hast found what we sought? Here's luck, Ben, here's luck. Ah, by cock, 'tis your fortune to find it, and your fortune's my fortune, eh, Ben, us being comrades, Ben. Aye, says Ben, turning the dagger this way and that. Hey, you come on the chart, Ben. Hey, you found the luck in it, Ben. Stay, Roger, I've but just picked it up. And was coming to your comrade with it, eh, Ben? Share and share alike, eh, Benno, Benny? Aye, says Ben, staring down at the thing. But 'twas me as found it, Roger. And what then, lad, what then? Why then, Roger, since I found it, 'tis mine, says he, gripping the dagger in quivering fist and glancing up sideways. Hilt and blade, Ben. And the chart, Roger? Aye, and the chart, Ben, says Tressidy, coming a pace nearer, and I saw his hook glitter. And the treasure, Roger, says Ben, making little passes in the air to see the blue gleam of the steel. All yours, Ben, all yours. And what's yours is mine, according to oath, Ben, to oath. But come, Ben, you hold the secret of the treasure in your fist, the silver goddess. Come, the chart, lad, out with the chart. And Bartlemy's jewels are ours. Pearls, Ben, diamonds, rubies. Ah, come on, find the chart. Let your comrade aid you, lad. Stand back, says Ben, and whips a pistol from his belt. Looky, Roger, says he, I found the dagger without ye, and I'll find the chart. Stand back. Why, here's ill manners to a comrade, Ben, ill manners, sink me. But as you will. Only out with chart. Let's go seek the treasure, Ben. Do ye know the secret of this thing, Roger? Not I, Ben. Why, then I must break it asunder. Hand me yon piece of rock, says Ben, pointing to a heavy stone that chanced to be near. Stay, Ben, lad, 'twere pity to crush the silver woman. But if you will, you will, Ben, take a hold. So saying, Tressidy picked up the stone, but as his comrade reached to take it, let it fall. Whereupon Ben stooped for it, and in that moment Tressidy was on him. And then, oh, Martin, I heard the man Ben scream, and as he writhed, saw Trestides Hook at work. The man screamed, but once, and then, wiping the hook on his dead comrade's coat, he took up the dagger and began to unscrew the head. But now, Martin, methought 'twas time for me to act if I meant to save my life, for I had not but Nick Frant's knife, while within Trestides' reach lay the dead man's pistols and divers musketoons and fusees on the beach behind him, which put me to no small panic lest he shoot me ere I could come at him with my knife. Thus, as I lay watching, I took counsel with myself as how I might lure him away from these firearms, wherewith he might hunt me down and destroy me at his ease. And the end of it was, I started up all at once, and leaning down towards him, shook the parchment in his face. "Ha, Tressidy," says I, "is this the thing you murdered your comrade for?" Now at this, Tressidy sprang back to stare at me from the thing in my hand, and then, ha, he, with a wild beast roar, sprang straight at me with his hook, even as I had judged he would. As for me, I turned and ran, making for a rocky ledge I knew, with Tressidy panting behind me, his hook ringing on the rocks as he scrambled in pursuit. So at last we reached the place I sought. A shelf of rock, the cliff on one side, Martin, and on the other a void, with the sea thundering far below. A narrow ledge where his great bulk hampered him, and his strength availeth little. And there we fought, his dagger and hook against my dead comrade's knife. And thus, as he sprang, I, falling on my knee, smote up beneath raised arm, heard him roar, and saw him go whirling over and down and splash into the sea. "And he had the dagger with him, Adam?" says I in eager question. "Aye, Martin, which was the end of an ill rogue and an evil thing." "The end," says I, "the end, Adam? Why then, what of this?" So saying, I whipped the strange dagger from my wallet and held it towards him balanced upon my palm. Now beholding this, Penfeather's eyes opened suddenly wide, then narrowed to slits, as viewing this deadly thing, he drew back and back, and so sat huddled in his chair, utterly still. Only I heard his breath hiss softly betwixt clenched teeth. "Martin," says he in the same hushed voice, "when a man's dead, he's dead, and the dead can never come back, can they, shipmate? But now, as we sat thus, eyeing the evil thing on the table betwixt us, my answer died on my lips, for there came a sharp, quick rapping of fingers on the lattice. Join me here next week for the next chapter of Black Bartlemy's Treasure on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.